Welcome to the Golf Legends Podcast, where we cover the champions and major winners of golf. Your hosts and main contributors are Dustin and Chad. Thanks for joining us today for...
How we doing, everybody?
Hey, well, welcome back to the Golf Legends Podcast. It's been, I think we're doing season two now. We're going to...
Yeah, we had a little bit of a hiatus there.
Yeah, we it turned into spring and we both kind of got busy and it's just slightly into summer for us as we're in Oregon and we're playing a little bit more golf and loving this weather that's outside right now, so...
Yeah,
thought we'd do a couple of so we're gonna have a couple of championship style coverage, and we're gonna try and meet it hopefully with the U.S. I'm sorry, with the Open or the British Open at the end of this 4 week little segment, but we're gonna start today with the PGA Championship.
Yeah, we're gonna cover the four majors here coming up in the next few weeks, and we're gonna start it off with the PGA Championship, like Dustin was just saying. So we're just going to kind of go into the history, some cool records, the courses that they have been played at.
It's an interesting, it's an interesting championship considering it gets weird now because it was the fourth major, and I guess you can still consider it, but technically now, starting this year, it's the second major of the year.
Of
this season, and... The interesting thing is to me, am I wrong, but is this more considered the like Players Championship? I mean, is this more considered that?
It's definitely more popular by the players than like the US Open.
Yeah, the players really usually enjoy playing at the PGA courses, it sounds like.
You've got that whole USGA, PGA.
I know, it's so weird. Rivalry. Yeah, I mean, we get to talk about the U.S. Open, and that seems to have a bit more history than this PGA Championship or how it works, particularly when this started. But this the start of the PGA Association was really in, I believe, 1916.
Yeah.
And this guy, Rodman Wanamaker. So the Wanamaker Trophy is what you win. Blessed or donated is not the right word. What's it called? Where you get a trophy, you know, like Sir Stanley's Cup or whatever it is. I mean, basically what it is.
Yeah. And it's kind of a fun fact is it's one of the heaviest trophies in golf, weighing in at 27 pounds.
That's legit.
So it's a massive
trophy. That's,
And that got started back all the way in 1916, like Dustin was saying. There were a lot of famous faces back there playing golf that joined in the PGA Championship back when it started. Walter Hagen, he had a really hot run and won four PGA Championships kind of early on there.
And this all kind of stems from the Professional Golfers Association, that's what PGA stands for, but them creating like a union basically or an organization. I mean, you can see what the PGA is now and what the USGA is now, you know, the United States Golf Association versus the Professional Golfers Association. So you see, like, I mean, I guess I'd kind of equate it to you know, theater actors and movie actors would be my, I mean, they're both professionals, you know, in that realm.
But kind of in a different circuit.
Yeah. So.
And the tournament really didn't get started until 1919. The first tournament was in 1916, but then because of World War I, the tournament wasn't played in 1917 or 1918. So it resumed in 1919 and then it's been played,
I think, for only one more interruption, and that was World War II, right?
Correct.
Right in 43.
Correct. Yeah.
So the neat thing about this tournament, and it was like kind of all of the rage, and I know at a few episodes back, I'm not sure if it was Gene Sarazen or what we chatted about, but we talked about the movie Vagger Vance. Bagger Vance. Yeah. Sorry, I flip those dang letters all the time. Will Smith. That's all I know. Smith and Matt Damon. But a big thing, I would say, back in the day or when these tournaments were started, was the exhibitions. But the exhibitions were match play as opposed to stroke play. So this tournament actually started as a form, it was all match play, with players playing 36 holes around and a loser in each match eliminated. So you got 36 holes. I mean, you got to win 19 of these things at least, right? I mean, you can. Yeah. I mean, it's probably actually pretty fun in that sense, because if you hit a bad shot, you might just give a hole away. I mean, you might,
yeah,
and then move on to the next one. Or you might
beat somebody by two strokes on a hole, but it really doesn't matter.
No, it could just.
So it had its ups and its downs, but these tournaments definitely, they played a lot more golf.
Oh, man,
a lot more golf than just the 72 holes that are played nowadays.
And you know what I didn't find, but I'm going to look up right now while Chad tells you a little bit about some of the championships. But it changed to normal stroke play in 1958. And then it actually added, it was the first major to add in 1976, 18 hole, playoff and Southern Death format. So that was pretty neat, but I'm going to actually check right now with how many players in the beginning did it, I mean, what was the field? Cause I don't actually know how many people were in the field of the original PGA.
So some of the main champions we were talking about kind of a little bit ago was Walter Hagen. He won five times in the 20s. He won in 21, 24, 25, 26, and 27. Jeez. So he won four straight years there through the mid-20s. Gene Sarazen was obviously around two, and he set a number of records. He won in 1922 when he was only 20 years old, so he was the youngest to win the PGA title, and still is. He won the title again in 23 and 33, and they also set another record by playing in a PGA championship at the age of 70, and that was in 1972.
Man, Sarazen, I'm telling you, somebody, anybody out there, we know we have some people in Iceland and in the UK, write a screenplay of this guy's life. Yeah. Because it's meant to be a movie.
Yeah, he just covered such a wide time frame. So now jumping ahead a little bit, the 40s were pretty much dominated by Snead, Hogan, and Byron Nelson, who won six of the PGA championships through those years. And like Dustin mentioned, in 43 it wasn't played because of World War II. After Snead's victory in 1951, the event had 19 different champions over the next 19 years. So 19 different champions over the next 19 years.
So yeah, we'll talk about like its formation. We talked about the PGA being formed in 1916 as with the USGA, which was formed in 1894. And we'll get more into the USGA when we talk about the US
Open.
That's almost
an episode in itself.
Yeah, the USGA versus the PGA. Yeah, it's it's definitely conceived. Interesting more than anything else.
Yeah. So part of the reason there was 19 different champions in 19 years was this is one of the championships that moves more than just about any other place.
Or
any other championship.
It really likes to. I mean, it kind of stayed in the beginning on the East Coast a little bit, as everything did. I mean, when we talked about Gene Sarazen, we talked about Byron Nelson, and even Ben Hogan for that matter. I mean, a lot of their golf, Byron Nelson was from Texas and such, but a lot of their golf was played on the East Coast. I mean, it's where the country clubs really, I mean,
there just weren't that many people out west.
Yeah.
The country was still developing, and golf just was kind of an elitist game that wasn't really played. You know, west of like Ohio.
Okay, so I found, sorry, not to interrupt Chad, but I found some of the sizes. So it started from 1916 to 1921. It started with 32 people. Then it doubled for 1922. 1923 was 64 also. Went back down from 1924 to 1934 to 32. From 35 to 41, it was 64. Basically jumped back and forth. And I'm not sure. It doesn't really say. And 64.
Participants in 64.
Until it went for that. I think it was 1956 is when it changed. 58. Or 58. Okay. So 56 and 57. And then subsequent years, it gets 128 competitors.
Okay. So that's more of like a normal field.
And that's when it started to develop the stroke play where there was a cut. Obviously, it was like you cut a lot more players at that point. So
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for checking
me out. Yeah.
So through the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s, we saw obviously Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Arnold Palmer. All these guys are kind of developing their careers and becoming dominant focal points of the sport.
The only one to really miss it was Palmer then, huh? Yeah. He missed it.
He finished second a lot. So, he was always in contention, but...
Weirdly enough, I think Nicklaus has that same thing, too. It's like him, Nicklaus, and Palmer were Mickelson, obviously, now... But they have a ton of second-place finishes.
And that's like, amazing for Nicklaus because, obviously, he has the most major championships of anybody. But he has an incredible amount of second-place.
Second places, I think, too.
20 majors.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I'll look that up at some when we cover him. But I think his second-place finishes are, like, I mean, insane.
So with Palmer not actually winning a PGA championship, he does have the record for... The first person to post four rounds in the 60s at the PGA Championship.
Ah, okay.
So that's kind of an interesting thing because they were playing stroke play now, obviously. And with stroke play, it requires you to be consistent through all 4 days.
Yeah, and so now, and a fun fact, Koepka, not for the PGA, but for the U.S. Open, just did the same thing. He had rounds in the 60s, and he didn't win. So, weirdly enough, yeah, and if you look at the rounds that he won, he was in the 60s for the PGA Championship and won those. So, it's funny how that, those, like, even being consistent, you really have to have a day or two of, like, true highlight, like, shooting a 63. Like, you got to be low at one point just to kind of separate yourself from the pack a little bit.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point because a lot of tournaments have, they're in nicer weather and places that aren't as nice as Pebble Beach.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, courses where they're a little bit more forgiving, the conditions are more conducive to really shooting low scores, and you can have a little bit more forgiveness and have an off day, whereas a lot of these majors you can't have an off day.
I mean, you look at like the Open and you see just how the one day, even in an afternoon, you start in the morning and you're getting a great morning, and in the afternoon the winds are
can still shoot three, are blowing, 68 and then shoot a 73 and be totally out of contention. So we'll jump ahead a little bit here. So Nicklaus, he did end up tying Hagen with 5 PGA championships when he won at Oak Hill in 1980. And that duo is followed by Tiger Woods, who has 4 PGA championships. And Woods won his first one at age 23 in 1999. And obviously, the rest is history.
He's won a ton of tournaments
since then. But he won his first one at age 23. So where we'll go now is, starting to kind of talk about the prize money and how that developed, which honestly is kind of how, the PGA and the USGA obviously have their differences, but how these majors kind of got established was really back in the day, getting funding.
Yeah, this Rodman Wanamaker was a huge, department store owner, basically. I mean, he wanted to gin up. I mean, it sounds bad, but he wanted to gin up business, and he lived around a course. I mean,
if you can get some buzz going around a certain course,
exactly.
And before you know it, you had a golf tournament, and then it turns into something, larger than any person some point.
We talked about, I remember when we were on Byron Nelson more than anything else, with how money was, like how much he won to how much he made really wasn't that much. I mean, I think Byron Nelson for most of his career had a day job, so to speak. And you can really see the first purse, and it's 1916, it's $2,500, which, hey, look, 1916, that's a lot of money. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
But from 16 to 1950, it had only grown. At 1950, your winning purse was $17,700. Like, that's...
No, that was the total... Right? The total purse was $17,700.
Oh, sorry.
The winner actually took just home $3,500.
$3,500.
Yeah.
So, sorry, the first the first championship, the purse, the full purse was $2,500. So now the winner's only taking home $1,000 more than that, and it's basically, you know, almost 40 years.
Yeah. And then from 1950 to 1958, that's when there was a big jump. So 1950, the total purse was $17,700. 1958, the purse is up to just under $40,000. And then, you know, from there, 64 just keeps going. It goes up to $100,000.
Well, you see, yeah, you see, and if you see who's winning, right? So 64 is when... is, you know, 1960s to the 80s is when Jack Nicklaus, Player, Palmer, all these, I mean, like, the true United States players of golf are coming around and winning this. And then the purse jumps, you know, by the end of 74, the purse is $225,000.
And then another 10 years, it's $750,000.
Yeah.
And so then in 94,
and then we get into Tiger Woods, we get into Tiger Woods land, right? Because he won it what in 99. So before that, it's almost $2 million. He wins it. It jumped, or you know, it, you know, basically from 1994 to 10 more years from that, it's jumped from a million, you know, 1.7 million to 6.2 million. I mean, that's a huge jump of things, and you jump another 10 years, and now it's at $8 million for the purse. So you're just seeing that. I mean, obviously with great golf and TV money and all that fun jazz, the purses are increasing. The all
bigger
eyes are
sponsors,
watching. Yeah.
You know, golf has a lot of, especially pre the you know 08 depression. Golf had a ton of financial institutions that were its main sponsors.
Oh yeah,
you always see like Wachovia and. There were a bunch of big banks and
absolutely. Yeah, I mean
different financial institutions. There was a lot of money in golf.
And even before, not even with the major champ, but like I remember the Tiger had his own like the Tiger World Challenge, and it was sponsored by like Chevron or like the one of a huge corporation doing it. So yeah, when it started getting popular, the money sure did come to it.
Yeah, so you want to dive into go over the
courses? Yeah,
now?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. So some of the early championships were played on private courses. They jumped into playing public courses, which you found the U.S. Open do kind of the same thing during the 1990s into the 21st century. So you when Chad, I think, said originally when we first started this, they really are the PGA Championship really wanted to highlight, it seems, the courses around the country. They played 71 courses in 25 states. I mean, they're moving. I mean, that's half the country they have played this PGA Championship in. So
yeah.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. So kind of so their most frequent venues. There's been four PGA Championships at the Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa, and then there's several places that have had three PGA Championships. One of them being the Atlanta Athletic Club. Firestone, which is another popular one in Akron, Ohio. Oakland Hills Country Club in Michigan. Oakmont, which is in Pennsylvania. Valhalla's in Louisville, Kentucky.
I think Valhalla's recent, too, right?
2014.
And it looks like they're getting one back there at 2024.
Yeah.
So we'll see it back at Valhalla.
Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. And that's just to name a few. All of those have had three PGA championships hosted there. So it's been spread out a lot of places. It's played all in, and you can tell all those different locations. It's pretty much all over the country.
Yeah.
So, now the main difference that we're going to start seeing this kind of turn into more of a open championship type weather conditions, if you will, is if they start playing these championships as the second major of the year,
they're
planning to in the future, it's not going to be played in August anymore. It's going to be played in April, or May. So we're going to start seeing some inclement weather conditions where it's not really summer yet. We're going to start seeing a lot more
rain. Absolutely.
Which kind of is a curveball for this.
Because when was this was played in the second week of May, right?
Yeah, it was played the
weekend before Memorial Day. So, I think that's going to be,
Labor Day.
That's going to be Memorial Day, you were right,
Okay.
It's going to be really interesting It was played before Labor Day the first time, and now since it moved this year. But I think you're right. You're going to see a few of these courses, like Valhalla in May, might not be the greatest course to play.
There's some of these places in New York. You know, Oak Hill Country Club's play. That's in Rochester, New York. That's upstate New York.
Man.
In May, it's probably, you know, it's going to be cold. It could potentially be cold. It could be nice, but it just throws an extra curveball in there for these earlier.
Yeah.
The earlier tournament.
And we were talking about, to finish kind of the purses, I just noticed this here, that the purse for 2018 was $11 million. So that you can just see how it's going. I mean, it's, you got all sorts of TV money, you got all sorts of sponsors, which is awesome. I mean, golfers, I mean, it wants to be a professional sport, and you're seeing all the professional sports basically get, you know, larger contracts, whether it's baseball or football or basketball, and golf is just chugging along with it. So.
Exactly. There's no major difference.
No, yeah. So we have, besides, I mean, that kind of covers some of our coverage, besides, like, I thought this was neat, the we're kind of calling it fast facts, but to be able to play in the PGA Championships, it's pretty cool. You need one of these things to happen, right? So all former PGA Championships can play. That's why you saw John Daly get that exception, because he wanted to play. They gave him an exception for his cart. He is also trying that for the Open, which sounds like he actually won't get that exception this time.
Yeah.
Because as golf, and we kind of adhere to this, we think you should be out and about walking. Like, you know, a personal opinion, I love being out and about and walking and not in a cart. So,
yeah. Well, John Daly's kind of an interesting character.
He's going to be fun to cover.
One of a kind.
Yeah. So if you want to play in the PGA Championship, you could be a former champ. You can be the winner of the last five majors, U.S. Opens or British Opens. You get an invite. Winners of the last three player championships. The 15 low scores and ties in the previous PGA Championships. So all these people get invites. The 20 low scores in the current year's PGA Professional National Championship, which I think that must be doing... The National Championship must be some form of an amateur thing or something. I mean, it just sounds kind of...
That's how the... I believe the amateurs...
I was going to say, why would you have a... I know, but it's professional golf. It's an interesting National Championship versus their PGA Championship kind of thing. The 70 leaders from the PGA Championship points list from the previous year's championship through the Wells Fargo. So basically, that's your point system. If you're playing PGA events...
And you've got the previous year's U.S. and European Ryder Cup teams. They're also included. Winners of tournaments co-sponsored or approved by the PGA Tour from the previous year's PGA Championship to the current year's PGA Championship. And these are kind of going down in order of importance.
Yes.
So at some point, if they run out of
vacancies, if they need players,
if everyone accepts, you know, at some point they're going to run out. And they max out at 156 players.
Yep.
So, and then after that, you know, vacancies will be filled with first player available from the list of alternates.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of different...
I love the additional, the PGA of America reserves the right to invite additional players not included in any of the above categories. So, like... I mean,
you could get celebrities.
Yeah, let's imagine if you were like a decent golfer and you, I mean, I don't know how you'd get how they, but you are a celebrity of some sort. I mean, there's no reason they wouldn't maybe invite you.
Yeah, I think there's a certain kind of professionalism and respect that they have for the tournament, so they're probably not going to make it a laughing stock.
I just like that they add that in there. You know what I mean? Like, you can see, like, Steph Curry or Michael Jordan. I mean, you could see, like, somebody, like, a different athlete. I mean, it's a TV show on some levels, right? Yeah. Like,
potentially. I mean, we'll see as golf develops. It's a pretty stiff game, so.
Yes.
You know,
it's not
as progressive as some other sports that we watch, but...
So, and then some of our other fast facts we have, just our records. I think Chad touched on it. You know, you have the five, two of them have won five. It's Walter Hagen and Jack Nicklaus. The oldest winner is 48 years old. His name is, I think, Julius Boros. Youngest was Gene Sarazen. And then you have five golfers who have won all four, which would be Sarazen, Hogan, Player, Nicklaus, and Woods. So that's including in there. And then, yeah, we just have the interesting fact of all this is that, is like what Chad was saying is it started out in the East Coast and it was just kind of this thing done by, Mr. Wanamaker. And then it's turned into, I mean, you can see real quickly, it's turned into, a complete major championship, with international players playing it. You know, 2009, Y.E. Yang became the first Asian American player to win the major championship, a major championship in general. And it was the PGA championship. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Hogan or, Bobby Jones is obviously the first player to ever win the Grand Slam.
Yes.
Which was all four of the championships in 1 year, which that was before the Masters was founded, so this was kind of predating what the standard setup is.
The neat thing, too, is we talked about Nicklaus a little bit, but Jack Nicklaus and Nicklaus also has the most runner-up finishes with four. I mean,
yeah,
he can have it... If he would have won those, it would have been nine. I mean, like, that's crazy. The greatest margin of winning was Paul Runyon beat Sam Snead 8-7 in 1938. That was when it was match play. And then the greatest winning margin in stroke play was 8 strokes by Rory McIlroy in 2012.
Yeah,
actually, I think that was... Was that one taken over? I don't
know. No, Jason Day won 2015, but he won 20 under par.
With his score, full strokes. Got you. This was an actual margin of beating.
They bounce around from course to course, and a lot of these courses are public courses. So the level of difficulty is obviously there, but it's not as difficult as, you know, a Bethpage Black or Winged Foot or some of these other courses that are known as being the most difficult courses on the tour. So, which is kind of the fun part of the PGA, you know, as opposed to like sometimes maybe the Open Championship or the US Open, not including this year, but the last couple of years where you've just seen players getting so frustrated because of the difficulty. Whereas the PGA Championship's more set up, like Dustin was saying, towards a player, for the players so that they can really attack holes and you get to see some fun, aggressive golf.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, so as we're kind of wrapping up the PGA Championship, it's definitely interesting. I heard a couple of arguments that the change kind of feels like the four majors are impacted, you know, because you were so used to getting this championship at the beginning of August or end of August kind of thing right before Labor Day.
But golf, let's be honest, it's not the most interesting thing to watch on TV.
No.
So,
and I kind of like it. I mean, I like that it's like every two and a half, three weeks, it's like another major. Yeah, I mean, it feels good.
3.5 weeks, it feels like there's a chance.
Yeah, because we went, especially this year, I mean, we went from the Masters with Tiger winning and feeling so good about that to him not even making the cut at this PGA.
Yeah.
To him kind of being in the mix for the U.S. Open, but then seeing whether Koepka won the PGA, and he's won, I think, twice now of it, right? Yeah.
But like Tiger, he didn't even play any tournaments in between the Masters and the PGA, and he actually played really poorly at the PGA.
Yeah, and then he played, I think, a tournament into the US Open.
And because people were commenting, they thought maybe he was rusty. Took a little bit too much party time after the Masters, but obviously he didn't play very well at the U.S. Open either. So,
and a fun little fact as we start our championship podcasts, I guess, are there. So I had heard Rory McIlroy won the week before the Canadian Open, I think it is.
Yeah, RBC.
And there's been no player to ever win the week before any major and win the major. So it's almost like the curse on some levels. Winning the week before is still netting you probably close to $1 million, if not more than $1 million. So you're still feeling good.
Yeah.
But the odds are you are not going to play the next week, that next major, as good as you probably can or for some reason.
But the courses are different. You're traveling. So it's probably more of a superstitious thing than it really is.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they're still playing golf every day. They're still practicing.
Yeah.
So
awesome. I think that covers the PGA Championship, and it was fun kind of researching this one a little bit just to see all the different things. I'm going to post in our little show notes, actual links to two websites. Both are from PGA.com. But it's really, really cool if you like the history of this and want a little bit more background for specific years. They talk about match play era, have pictures, but pretty much starting, and it's in no, I'm sure, no big big surprise, pretty much starting when TV got involved. They have these awesome short, like, I would say 2 to 4 minute clips of whoever was winning, and it's kind of basically a summary of their PGA championship for that. And they don't go every single year, but they cover a lot of years, and it's really cool to see all the way up till this year. So I'll post those in the show notes, and yeah, we thank you guys for listening. We're having some fun. This will be a fun little season. We have some pretty cool coverage. We're going to try and throw in a couple of guests if we can, and we'll see. But
yeah, we'll hope to see you next week, and we'll sign off until then.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed our show, please rate us on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Golf Legend Pod. If you have ideas on who we should cover or just want to drop us a line, please do at golflegendspod@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back on the links in a week.